He's a former pro, an SEC analyst, and a damn good dog. Matt Stinchcomb is only on the College Football Voice of the South. Presented by Georgia's Own Credit Union, Cigna, Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and ASW Distillery.
Matt Stinchcomb on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line with us each and every Tuesday. Matt, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are y'all doing?
We're doing well. I just a general question. You played offensive line. I'm assuming you played it in high school because you were good enough to be asked to play it in college, then good enough to be blessed to play it in the NFL
Drafted
as well.
Drafted in the first round.
Yeah, sure. Have you ever had one of your quarterbacks come over and just let the world know that he's out there seeing ghosts?
No. No, I haven't heard. That hasn't come up yet.
What might your reaction have been?
That my quarterback was seeing ghosts?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard. Sam Darnold last night was mic'd up and during the Monday night game.
Came to the bench and said exactly that.
Yeah, he said he's seeing ghosts out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're coming up on Halloween. So was he meaning it from a literal sense or just as in he wasn't seeing the defense very clearly?
I think
it's obvious you know, the Patriots will do that to you from time to time. I mean, from a defensive structure standpoint, the way they can show pressure, drop out, bring pressure. I think that they toy with a lot of quarterbacks' minds, whether they're in their second year, third year, doesn't matter. So it would be concerning, that's for sure. But I've never had a quarterback come up and say anything. He certainly hadn't brought it up in a huddle.
Do we chalk it up as a learning experience for the young man?
Maybe you're right, Matt. Maybe he did see people in ghost costumes in the stands at MetLife Stadium. Who knows?
Hey, watching those paranormal shows, was it on like Discovery Channel? You just get off the cable television and get back in the film room. It's the power of suggestion.
Well, the power of suggestion is that Georgia fans, based on their booing, weren't happy the other night. But we said it, especially in weather like that. What you see is pretty much what you're going to get. There's going to be anomalies here and there, like what Jake Fromm did against Tennessee on that Saturday night a few weeks ago. But this is the Georgia offense. They're going to break you down, wear you down, hopefully be responsible with the football, and then win the fourth quarter.
He hit it. That's exactly right. That seems to be the MO, that's for sure. And I will say, frustrated, go ahead. You can be frustrated. But, I mean, if there's a little bit of thought put into it, who exactly are you booing when you're booing in those scenarios? Are you booing the players and their level of play, and what is that effect supposed to be exactly? You know, if you begin with the end in mind, and you're a fan, and you're sitting in the rain, and you're not happy because it's nothing to nothing, and you're out there booing, what is it that you're booing? Is it the effort?
Well, I have a theory. I think you're booing the style.
You can boo the style. And do you think you boo it to the point where the style changes? Like, you know what, there's been just so much booing that now we get the football that we want, whatever that might be, right? Because if you go in that stands and you ask the same folks, whoever it is that's booing, and I'm not saying that it was an exhilarating game, and I could see where the frustration would come from. It's just how it would manifest itself in booing. I just find that to be incredibly curious. And certainly I don't know what the positive effect could possibly come from that. Doing something like that. I don't get it. I get the frustration, sure. What I don't get is the booing. You're booing your players. You're booing your coaches. You're booing all of them because it's hard to be surgical with a boo. The boo's kind of a generic boo. It ends up kind of blanketing everything, and it can be applied every which way, right? It's specificity with booing, tough to pull off.
Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. So we look at this Florida matchup a week from Saturday. Obviously, it's taken a different turn. This Florida team is better than a lot of us thought they were going to be.
Yeah, and I will say this. We look at the SEC East and the quarterback situation, and several teams now onto their third starting quarterback, and some have jockeyed between two and three, and Vanderbilt got a win just this past Saturday at one that seemed to be highly unlikely versus Missouri, starting a backup quarterback and then reverting back to the displaced starter. Because of the Mo Hassan getting knocked out of the game with a dirty hit from a Missouri player. But they got the win. And then you look at Florida, backup quarterback Kyle Trask, and what Dan Mullen's been able to do with the weapons that he does have. Because he's had to engineer around an offensive front that is improving and has improved and at times has done an excellent job of protection. but they aren't what they want to be or what they ultimately, I think, will become at Florida with what they have up front now. But what they have been able to do with Kyle Trask, who I don't think anyone's going to say has the greatest arm strength in the world, but you know, to hear Steve Spurrier say it reminds me of Danny Werfel, if it was a highly catchable ball and you watch him play, and he's got an incredibly high completion percentage. When you look at the on-target throws, he's an accurate passer. Hasn't been great in the pocket and ball security, but they found ways to get big plays. Now, the one the other night versus South Carolina was a dubious one at best that ended up going for a touchdown. A couple of issues with flags that stayed in pockets that otherwise should have come out on the field. But regardless, you have to be impressed with an offense that didn't look like, especially post Felipe Franks' injury, was ever going to be able to be much of a threat that's complementing what has proven to be a really good defense on the other side of the ball.
I think you have to be careful when you do comparative scores, but because of the proximity of these games, Georgia, South Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, I think it's okay. And I think, again, whether it's going back to a style, did they have a better style to beat South Carolina as opposed to you? I'm not sure what I'm supposed to get out of it, but I am okay because of the time frame. If I was a Georgia fan watching a Florida-South Carolina game, I probably sat up a little bit and thought this isn't going to be as easy as I thought it was going to be in August. But what can I actually glean out of those two games?
Well, there's a couple of things. I will say that Florida did an excellent job of finding ways to get guys open. And late in the game, I think the score is a bit deceiving because it kind of broke there towards the end once the game kind of got away from South Carolina. It was a close game. And easily could have swung the opposite direction, of course. And South Carolina, of course, didn't get great play from their quarterback position, got knocked out versus Georgia. So the comparison, there's a certain commonality between those two games that you could draw some deductions. Offensively for Florida, though, they did an excellent job of utilizing – they've got a weapon in number 84, Kyle Pitts. By the end of this season, we'll talk about other tight ends, and maybe he won't do as much. It's not really a traditional tight end type, a longer body. But he is the matchup nightmare that people talk about every week. Oh, this tight end, he can run, so he's a matchup issue. This guy's for real, and they find ways to target him over and over and over again. It proved to be the case the other night versus South Carolina. But big plays were the difference is what I saw more than anything else. Not only the turnovers, so you take those out of it, four turnovers, two missed field goals. I don't think Georgia replicates that. I certainly wouldn't hope to. However, what Florida did get was big plays offensively, and that was one of the commentaries that came out of the Georgia program after the South Carolina loss. We got to find a way to get explosive plays. There's no doubt. That's what Florida has lived on. They did an excellent job of generating those. They got them versus Auburn in their big win, and they got them the other night versus South Carolina offensively, finding ways to get guys loose. If it's hitting Van Jefferson on us, or Freddie Swain rather on a slant that takes it to the house versus Auburn, or if it's rocking out an outside run for a touchdown, or Freddie Swain running an out and up on a scramble drill, it's one of those things where Florida has found ways to get those big explosives. And to me, that's the biggest difference, other than the four turnovers or the takeaways that South Carolina got. Certainly didn't generate that many versus Florida the other night, but it was the big plays that the Gators were able to get that was the difference in the game, certainly from an offensive perspective.
Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. We said it. This is what pretty much Georgia is as far as offensive philosophy is concerned. That being said, do you think they get a little bit more creative using the backs out of the backfield, maybe seeing more James Cook using what you have at tight end a little bit more?
Maybe, you know, and maybe it's a different route combinations outside. I will say it does seem as if, you know, when Jake Fromm's throwing the football, first of all, you know, it's taken a while to get the ball out of his hands, largely because where are you going to go with the ball? And when he is throwing it, it seems like they're largely contested throws. This is all anecdotal. I don't have the numbers. It's hard to capture that quantitatively. But of the balls where you're throwing to half of a receiver versus an open receiver, those are the things that I think that can be certainly be refined. Now, in the run game, you know, I think we talked about it last week and watching that game back, especially in the first half, there were definitely opportunities. You know, you're a hair away from breaking out an explosive run. You know, it's back getting tripped up on the lineman's foot, or just a shoestring tackle, or just a poor blocking on the perimeter, missed assignment on the second level. But the line of scrimmage, there was opportunities certainly to get that ground game going, and did. It wasn't – we lacked the explosive plays from an offensive standpoint. But there's opportunity, I think, in the passing game to try to find ways to generate some more separation, to get some of these receivers open to where your quarterback isn't throwing what ultimately is a contested catch, because it does seem as if there has been a high propensity for that.
I don't know what you were aware of when you were in school. You got your own things to deal with. You're trying to play football. You're certainly trying to go to class. As we found out, I believe, a couple of weeks ago, you never missed one class, and again, not forgotten.
I never ditched one class. There's a difference. Okay. You know, I missed a couple of classes.
Okay. So you're not perfect is what we just found out. But when a team like Illinois or Vanderbilt wins a game, again, when you're in school, maybe you're not noticing what's going on around the rest of the country. As an adult, can you sort of appreciate what those kids – even Georgia Tech this past weekend. Can you appreciate what those guys are now feeling, what that tastes like?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you can think about, unfortunately, had that experience in the NFL, had the experience while at Georgia when we went 5-6 my sophomore year, but found a way to win a four-overtime game versus an Auburn team. We had no business beating. I think they were a top-10 team at the time. I don't know. I can't remember. We come in there, you're playing a backup quarterback, your backup tailback, you got no business winning the game, and in four overtimes you find yourself on the winning side of it. So you can't say enough about victories like that and what it can mean to a program, especially one that is struggling. And all those teams that you just mentioned, Illinois, Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech, they desperately needed a win and found a way to do it. And then the other side of it, too, is that, you know, it's interesting. It makes it a lot more interesting when there aren't as many foregone conclusions. Last year was one of the most boring college football seasons ever, for me anyway, because you're sitting there going, is it not inevitable? Aren't we all seeing it? It's Alabama-Clemson. And it only got interesting in the national championship game because it was supposed to be Alabama, and it turned out that it was Clemson. But it really kind of boiled down to really that one game, at least for me. This year, you look at the SEC East race, and it's all over the place. The East Division is incredibly fun, but you could also say that, look, the fact that there isn't a team that you're sitting there going, it's a given, even with Alabama with the injury to Tua now. So who is inevitable this year in college football?
Well, Wisconsin's
certainly
defense.
In the SEC.
Yeah, Wisconsin.
Yeah, maybe it's LSU.
And Wisconsin looked like a team that certainly was not going to drop that game. Not with the defense they played and with the ability to run.
Matt, you bring up Alabama, relatively speaking. They're undefeated. I know that Tua is hurt now, but a lot of injuries on defense as well. Is this one of the more challenging seasons of Nick Saban's career at Alabama?
I think it would have to be. And then you couple in the turnover that he's experienced at the coordinator positions year after year after year. I think it's the third consecutive year now. And you're talking about that's a lot of new faces. And then a defense that started the season with true freshmen up the middle, and you've got – you're on your third string, quote unquote, linebacker in the inside. Then you got your quarterback going down, having to get his the high ankle sprain addressed on the other leg this time. And you don't have a Jalen Hurts to turn to this time around at quarterback. Now, it came at a good time because you've got Arkansas. We just saw them. Now, if Arkansas pulls up the upset, then this has got to be one of the craziest seasons in college football. History, at least halfway through the year or barely halfway through the year. But the fact that these teams are finding ways to win, the fact that Illinois found a way to beat Wisconsin and that was even possible, or that Vanderbilt, who just lost to UNLV, and then you turn around and you beat what was at that point in time the SEC East Division leader in Missouri, so and was in the top 25 at the time, you know, just about anything can happen, and a lot's gone on. It makes it that much more interesting.
Last thing, I don't know if you saw what Dabo did to a young man who was thrown out of a football game. Did you see he put him on a manager's bus? He didn't get to fly home 450 miles. You're going to ride on the bus because he threw punches in a football game. Can I ask? I think I know what both of Nick and I felt in this room. What do you think when you hear that?
Yeah, the kid, what, he get in a fight or whatever?
He did. He threw a couple of punches in the third quarter, got thrown out of the game. They put him on the manager's bus.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Yeah, it's a football team. We're just sitting golden gloves, and you send a message. And I think, look, Coach Dye said this a long time ago, you can coach him as hard as you love him. And so you see some of these guys and some of the decisions that are made outside. And I don't know what side y'all came down on this, actually. I'd be curious. So what was y'all's impression?
I had no problem with
it. No problem at all.
Yeah, I don't either. But I also think that there's a greater context there, not just in the game. First of all, there's no place for that on a football field, period.
Plus, the guy he was punching was down on the ground already.
I have not seen the clip, but regardless, even if he ain't on the ground, I don't care. This is you want to take care of things. You get 6 seconds between every whistle. Snap to whistle is about 6 seconds. Take care of it then, and it, a lot is taken care of in those 6 seconds, I can assure you. But you don't need all that. There's just no place for it. And so for him to send a message in that manner, yeah, I'm on board with that. I think that a lot of guys will probably think twice before they would consider doing something like that on the field again for Clemson.
I'll tell you what I also think it does. When you do that to a starter, you're telling everybody who's not a starter, I bet not just on the football field, I got 7 days a week to worry about what this man thinks of me. And I think there are certain coaches, maybe it would have been looked at as a bully tactic, and maybe Dabo gets a pass because there really doesn't seem to be bullying him. But I just think if I'm the 78th guy on that team, I'm going to class. I'm going to make sure my license isn't suspended. I do not want to be in the middle of that if he's willing to do that to a starter.
Is that what's being said, that the head coach was bullying a kid that was throwing punches on a field?
No. I'm saying he doesn't have that reputation. Look, Jeremy Pruitt was the guy who was talked about this week for, to call it a grab of a face mask seems very excessive, but he wasn't happy with his quarterback, and he let him know when he came to the sideline. Jeremy Pruitt was catching crap for coaching that kid that way.
I'll say this. It's a bad idea to do what Coach Pruitt did. I get the whole coaching hard and all that other stuff, but unless you're coaching a kid or teaching a kid, you shouldn't put your hands on them. It's inviting calamity. It's just not a good idea, regardless of what he just did. And what the kid did is the most inexplicable thing I maybe have ever seen a player do. That said, it's just not a good idea.
You have to keep your hands
in
your pocket.
We saw from Jimbo Fisher a year ago.
You got to keep your hands in your pocket is basically what you're saying. Put both hands, find a pocket in your shorts, your coaching pants, whatever the hell.
So what you're saying, man, if anybody was ever justified in coaching history to put their hands on a kid, Jeremy
Pruitt. But you still can't do it.
They had the right, but still you can't.
You can't do it. Yeah. It's just, you know, look, it's an emotionally charged environment. Those guys, it's a physical game. You play the game on edge as it is. What I'm saying is it's not even as much the coach doing it, and if that's appropriate, which it isn't. What if he doesn't like it? I've never had my face mask grabbed and enjoyed the experience. It just doesn't go well on the field or otherwise. I've never had a coach grab my face mask, thankfully. But maybe it's because they couldn't reach it. I'm sure they would have liked to have done it. But the other piece of it is that, you know, you're inviting calamity. Well, what if that kid, you know, you grab a kid's face mask. And the other day it was just a little tug or whatever. But if you grab a kid's face mask and snatch him around, and we've seen coaches get after some players. Jimbo Fisher, it's not a good idea. What if that kid responds in kind? Now what? How do you deal with that situation afterwards? It's just not smart.
Well, I do know the kid's at a disadvantage at that point. If you want to get physical with me, here's what I know I can't do. I can't get physical back with you, because whether it's a scholarship or whatever else, that part does stink. You want to touch me like a man? Let's make sure that we both understand we're men here.
I guess
at this
it makes
moment.
Sense to say just avoid it overall. What game do you have this week?
Tennessee, South Carolina.
Oh.
Both programs very, very happy with officiating. I will say this. Maybe we'll just do a split screen of the two head coaches and see how they react.
Maybe they should play it like a pickup basketball game. Let's call our own.
I don't know if that would go very well. Get the training staff ready.
We may see a coach combust in that game. All right, Matt, listen, we appreciate the time. We'll talk about it next week.
All right, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.